previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Wipe that silly grin off your face.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 155 for the week of May 15th, 2017. I am Lake of Shining Waters, David T. Cole, and I'm here with French ruffian, Sarah D. Bunting. Raspberry cordial, Tara Ariano.
Delicious and non-alcoholic.
And slate cracker, Alex Collins.
Don't call me carrots.
Welcome back to another Extra Hot Grape. Thank you for your patience last week while we filled with minis. Dave is back from Oahu and dead. Just kidding. He's fine.
Yes. Tests were negative, I guess.
Yeah. Which in this case is positive.
Which just means on to the next question.
Yes. But enough about Dave's health. We are here with first time guest Alex Collins. Welcome, Alex.
Hello.
Hi, Alex.
Yay!
Hello.
We invited Alex on for this discussion of Anne with an E for a variety of reasons, like that she is female and Canadian, but also has a daughter that is around the age of this character. Is that not correct?
That is very correct. And when I read some of the readings of a smart, precocious, and somewhat annoying talkative child, it sums up mine pretty well.
Now you're a little bit younger than us, and we talked about the original Megan Follows miniseries a few weeks ago in our spring preview. Was that part of your growing up? Like, was that on your radar when you were a kid?
That is my life. Like, that was growing up. I mean, we read the book when I was young, and then I've watched the series since I can remember watching it, and I'll still even dig out the DVDs every couple of years and watch them again.
Yeah.
So it's a big part of my Canadian existence.
In addition to which, you are actually from the Maritimes, not from Prince Edward Island, but from the general area.
Yeah, from Newfoundland and Labrador, just, you know, over a little ways east. So we're
the miscellaneous provinces. Well,
let's go with that, yeah.
Ontario, Quebec, and the rest.
All right, so what was your feeling going into this adaptation? Were you concerned about it because you had such love for the original, or were you excited to see how it would be for a new generation?
Concerned is like putting it mildly. I was annoyed. I felt like, why would we do this? Especially if something that's so sort of entrenched in Canadiana and what we know of the story. And it's so quintessential to that I was really apprehensive about it. And I will say I had a hard time getting on board the first couple episodes even, because I was so, you know, this isn't my Anne of Green Gables. Mm-hmm. It's not my Marilla. It's not my Matthew. It's not even my Rachel Lynde. So it took me a couple of episodes to really get over that and be like, okay, I can enjoy this.
But you did though. You did eventually get on board. Yeah.
I really did. Like, and when I went back, because we had this series in Canada a couple months leading up to this, so we've been watching them as a family. And like I said, the first couple episodes, I was just angry. But then when I continued watching it and took a new perspective, and then preparing for this, rewatched the first two, I did really enjoy it. And I really sort of realized that, you know, a lot of the themes that were explored in the book in the early 1900s, and even then, you know, the series in the 80s couldn't be told this way at that time.
Yeah.
It probably, you know, you couldn't go as deep into her abuse and even some of the, you know, feminist ways that we start about it. And I really got on board with it by the end.
All right. Sarah, what were your thoughts? You wanted me to take over after the intro, which to me means you have bad things to say.
I don't, but I'm not Canadian. Okay. Like, we have our own. I read all the books, like the entire series up until like basically she's dead and a ghost. I read them all because eventually, as a young American reader, you run out of Louisa May Alcott and you have to hit like all of a kind family. And then it's like, well, there's this mysterious country north of here where people still wear petticoats. Why don't you try this? And it was like, oh, okay. I loved the series, but I saw maybe one episode of the seminal Megan Follows version and was not attached to it. this character has not aged particularly well for me. I know that that's the point of her, but as, you know, in the States, like, we have our sort of prodigiously vocabularied redhead. It's Joe March, and we're all set, kind of. But this was, so I only watched the first one because it was quite long, and I was kind of done with it by then. But it was beautiful to look at, and I was, you know, I think it's probably a good series, but I was not invested to continue past the first hour and a half. What was your feeling about it? Because you have been kind of semi-dreading this for months now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep watching it. I'm watching this in parallel with the other big Canadian novel adaptation, The Handmaid's Tale, and being able to be like, well, that wasn't in the book, or, you know, it's a very similar experience because this one takes a lot of liberties with the story as well. Some things are very true. And it was funny watching the remake, how many of the sort of touchstones of the story I remembered so clearly, like, you know, the threats about, like, strychnine in the well, like, oh, it all came back to me. Like, those lines that are so small and yet so pivotal. And I thought it was good. To Alex's point that the story, the way they're telling it, could not have been told this way in the 80s, I think is true. And it reminded me, actually, did anyone see the Francis what's her face? That Australian accent. The remake of Mansfield Park from the 90s with Johnny Lee Miller. Anyone?
Nope.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about, but I didn't see it.
Okay. Yeah. It's a Jane Austen adaptation, and there's, like, glancing references in the novel to one of the sons of this family that takes in the orphan as being away in the colonies dealing with their plantations. And in the movie, they really run with that and sort of write in this kind of storyline about, like, Tom basically getting syphilis or something from raping slaves, which is, I'm going to just say, not in Jane Austen's novel. This is not the Anne with an E does not go that far in kind of contemporizing or, like, fleshing out things that are sort of, you know, referenced in passing and not really dwelled on in the book. But, like, it does show the trauma of the different households that she was placed in, and, you know, seeing a father, like, die in front of her when he was in the middle of, like, trying to beat her up, basically. And, like, that sort of informs why she is the way she is, which is, as Sarah says, kind of annoying, but that's part of it.
Kind of.
This, okay, go ahead, Dave. What did you think? This was first experience of Anne.
Yeah, I had not watched Anne of Green Gables because, as I said on Twitter, no lasers as a kid. And I always kind of thought this, I always got this confused with Road to Avonlea, which is the same thing.
Yeah, it's a spinoff.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? I was going to say,
they're related.
I thought it took place in the same sort of story universe.
Yes.
I'm glad I'm right about that. Yeah, if I were Matthew, who is the older brother in this, who adopts Anne, I think I would have dumped her somewhere along the road on the way to Green Gables, because she just doesn't shut up. She doesn't talk. I mean, you know, I have a tough time with kids. Guys, I'm teaching photography at middle school right now, and all the kids are little monsters. So this might be a little more harsh than it would be otherwise. But I think I would just dump her on the avenue of White Flower Delights or whatever the hell that was and just let her fend for herself amongst the cherry trees. She is so annoying. And yeah. I realized that this story, you know, it's like a kid's book. And I was talking to somebody on Twitter. She was like, yeah, I guess this might be, like, you know, young adult now. You know, it might be that sort of, you know, age level.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they would market it if it was a new story.
Yeah, she's a tween.
Yeah. But still, even if, you know, you are a kid and you want the kid to be the smartest person in the room, you know, and that's how you get into the story, I still would throw her down the well.
Yeah, I mean, it was really relatable to me when I was a kid, like, that she just couldn't hold in all these wonderful thoughts about how romantical everything is. Mm-hmm. Now it's just like, oh, Anne/younger Sarah, shut up.
and the walking Canadian thesaurus. I totally understand that I'm just speaking from somebody who this was totally not made for, you know, because if if this is a nostalgia play, then it's made for people like Tara. If this is a, you know, YA play, then it's made for, I don't know, people like Liv or something like that.
Or Molly.
Yeah, or Molly. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I get that part of it, but I swear every time she was on the screen, I wanted to reach into the TV and just kind of flick her nose or something like that.
Okay, well, let's take this back to the woman who actually lives with a very talkative, bright, precocious, lovely daughter of around this age that I felt like watching that this time, my sympathies definitely yawed between Anne and Marilla. In a way that it didn't when I was a kid, obviously. Mm. Like, it's like watching my so-called life now where it's like, oh, God, I'm the mom. Like, I have a completely different perspective on it. So how did you react to it emotionally if coming from it from your specific life experience, Alex?
Well, I found it's funny. So when Dave talks about her being annoying, I had that gut reaction the first episode. I mean, I wanted to throttle her. And I actually pulled out the original DVDs and I was going to watch just to see if it was that, was Anne that annoying in the original series? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or is it just that my tolerance for annoying children is non-existent, which I really, I love my child. I like a lot of her friends, but like random kids on the street, not my bag. So I didn't know, was it just me? Am I being sensitive? But I will say, like, my urge to do that, and again, when I talked about, like, the biggest stumbling block I had for the show was comparing it to the original. And once I got over that, you know, I kind of tucked the DVDs back away and said, I don't need to do the comparison now. But I still, and the other part of it, too, sorry, was that she got better. Like, the annoyingness, I don't know if it just finally wore me down or if she just got less, you know, straight out annoying as she was in the first episode, but I found that really grating too. And I think even my, like I said, my talkative 10, almost 11 year old found her to be a little much in the first one, but I will say it did get better throughout the series and we finished it. And towards the end, there were a couple really, really great episodes that tackled sort of more girl stuff that was really, really well done and sort of modern issues, you know, Diana's lesbian aunt who, you know, lived with her companion in the later years of her life. Ooh. And there's a great scene, I think in the beginning of the fifth episode where Anne actually gets her period and then chaos ensues. And it just feels really, it felt real. It was fun. You know, we all sort of laughed and giggled with it. And I will say the series as it got towards the end, I got more into it too.
The first episode was not so subtle. And I was just curious if it's any more nuanced as it goes along, especially with Anne and Anne's interactions with the adoptive family.
Yeah. I think it becomes more endearing. Like the relationship between them, it becomes less forced. Like, I mean, to what you were talking about, Dave, with Matthew and the carriage ride, like I just sort of went, to what you were saying is I don't know how Matthew doesn't chuck her overboard. But as it keeps going, you see how they're drawn to her and you see what Marilla sees in her. And I think what Marilla, I think Marilla was always a little bit this way. It just wasn't as overt that, you know, she at that was a woman of that time who kind of had to accept her lot in life, but sees in Anne all this potential of this really smart, bright child who was kind of handed a raw deal at the beginning of her life. And Marilla has this opportunity to improve it and sort of takes responsibility of that and really is drawn to that with Anne. And then for Matthew, it's just this, you know, I think they were lonely and now there's this really towards as the series progresses, less annoying and more sweet child who really makes them happy and brings some sunshine into their life. And I think what was true of the original of the book and of the original series and, you know, what I ended on when I finished this was that really what you realize is the Cuthberts need Anne as much as she needs them. And that was always what resonated me. And it brought me back there at the end of this series. And that's kind of what saved it all for me.
Well, what was interesting to me, too, is that they've aged down the character from the miniseries, too. This girl seems much, much younger than Megan Follows did. And I'm sure probably as I haven't looked it up. But like, that also helps make her a bit more endearing because she seems more vulnerable. Like she really is a kid, you know, she doesn't seem like she's, I mean, the period story aside, she seems very, very, you know, young and scared. Like she's had a rough life. So yeah, I'm interested to keep watching. I watched the first two. And R.H. Thompson is a very, he's not as good as Richard Farnsworth. I'll just say it, but that's Matthew.
He's got like, Basset Hound DNA or something. He's got the most watery eyes I've ever, and they're like always on point. Yeah.
And I didn't draw the connection until Dan said it, that it's Jasper Johns from Road to Heavenly, which and then my eyes went, oh my God, it's Jasper. And so it was nice. Like it was a nice little, and you're right. There will never be another Matthew, but he and Marilla are good. Like they are, the actors are do a good job with what
I have a theory about got. Why, did they ever explain why suddenly it was Anne with an E at the 11th hour?
Oh, why the title changed? Yeah. No, I don't know. Not that I saw.
I'm going to guess somebody at Netflix HQ was like, oh, is that our new Anne Frank series? because in Canada, if you said Anne, you go to Anne of Green Gables.
You're right.
Everywhere else, the most famous Anne is Anne Frank.
Yep.
And people generally probably don't know what she looks like, even though the, you know, poster they're using is very much not Anne Frank. And you would hope that people wouldn't think, but still, these are the reasons why changes like these happen.
Well, I Anne bet Frank it was wasn't making group. A lot of with an flower E. crowns. Oof.
No.
The marketing was funny. And actually, I don't know if you saw, drew a lot of controversy in Canada for how the posters were done for the States version and the Canadian version.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal.
Yeah. I love how much of a news story that probably was in Canada, too.
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah.
I know exactly how big it was. For honest to God, like 3 days.
All of Canada and all of Japan was furious.
Yeah.
For some reason, Japan is way into the story. I remember from when I lived there.
One last thing that I wanted to bring to the table is the credits with the Tragically Hip song, which I thought was a little easy, ahead by a century. And those credits are so divorced from the show, the style of the show. It just generally makes me think, like, why don't show creators really get engaged in the credit portion or, you know, the theme and all that stuff of their show? Like, obviously a lot of the times that's just, you know, given to some company to produce and is just inserted in. And you can always tell when it was divorced from the rest of the creative process. Did anybody find that? Do you ever find it really jarring? Those? I mean, they were fine. I mean, they were like intricate and, you know, nice to look at and everything. But
I didn't think they were that disconnected. The song, I agree, was like, that was a corny choice. But I thought it was, we're supposed to be seeing the world as Anne sees it in her, you know, crazy imagination.
Yeah.
So it worked for me.
Okay.
I don't know. What did everyone else think?
I had no issues. I thought it was fine.
Just Dave, then. All right, fine.
Yep.
Who will fight me?
Not us.
Nope.
Any
You're
final Anne thoughts before we move on? Anne with an E?
Her? Someone had to.
No, we're covering them all this week on previously.tv. We are swarming it. So there's already, as you listen to this, there will be 5 up. And then the last two will finish out this week. So join us at previously.tv for all of that coverage. And we will move on to Around the Dial in a moment. But first, we have a message for Sean.
A year ago, Liz quit her boring, soul-sucking job to take a lower-paying dream job as a baseball writer. That is the dream, indeed. And left Connecticut to move in with her amazing boyfriend, Sean, in Ohio. As a former fan of our old site, Television Without Pity, Liz naturally introduced Sean to Extra Hot Great and Again With This, and now they listen together every week. As they approach their first cohabitativeversary, Liz wanted to mark the milestone by celebrating another of their shared passions, the Democratic Socialists of America. Here is where I turn things over to our resident pinko, Tara.
Thank you so much, Comrade Bunting. As anyone who follows my Twitter feed knows, I am also a proud member of the DSA. So in Sean's honor, I wanted to highlight a few platform positions that even the most dubious liberal centrists might be able to get on board with. Number one, you've heard of the fight for 15 to raise the minimum wage. The DSA is active in this battle. Number two, the DSA strongly opposes the outsized role of the donor class in the American electoral process. Shouldn't you have the same political power as either one of the Koch brothers? The DSA thinks so. I know there's more than two, but, you know, those are the ones that are really active. Number three, and my personal favorite plank of the DSA platform, Medicare for All. Would you like to live in a nation where there's no such thing as medical bankruptcy because there's no such thing as medical bills? The rest of the developed world enjoys this freedom, and so could the USA. I know socialist is a scary word because it used to be right there in the middle of the USSR's name, but democratic socialism just means pushing our political parties, maybe one in particular, further to the left by demanding that the government safeguard programs that actually help people, and isn't that a novel idea? You can join Lovebirds, Liz and Sean, and me on the right side of history, sorry but it's true, at dsa.org. Congratulations, Sean and Liz, on your first year of living together, and here's wishing you many more to come in solidarity.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, time for another tar update.
Hey, Pinko. They bought that space. What could I do?
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara. Pinko Ariano.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll keep this short. Nick Reinwald Jones. Yes, I will.
No, he didn't.
Wrote an excellent new show fact sheet last week of Downward Dog, which ABC.com has had available to pre-screen before its premiere, which is on the evening of Wednesday, May 17th. This is the new Alison Tolman sitcom where she has a dog named Martin and he talks. It's based on a web series that was developed by an advertising agency in Pittsburgh, and Nick laid this out very well, so please go to previously.tv and read his preview of the show, but this is weird. Networks, I don't think, should get into the sadcom genre. It's not their lane, and it's very weird for them to do it, and most of all, I don't know why anyone thought anyone would want to watch a show about a dog who is sad. This is the opposite of the kind of dog I want to see in life or in pop culture. And sort of the story is about how Martin feels neglected by Nan, his owner, the Alison Tolman character, and tells us about it. And we see a lot of shots of him, like, sitting in the house, looking out the window, being alone and lonely. And, like, this is not entertaining or fun or funny or good.
How much Sarah McLachlan's in this show is what I'm...
Oh, God. Jesus.
He's not that sad. Oh, okay. He's still got... food and water, and she lets him out to pee and stuff. But
maybe that Sarah McLachlan song about the stalker, then.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm not sure who this is for. I am sure it's not going to last. So nice try, Downward Dog. Nick and I are both potentially your target audiences, people who are way too into their dogs, and both of us were like, no, thank you. So skip Downward Dog on ABC is my recommendation, and Nick's. And for my
or in other words, woof, right?
Yeah.
Thanks.
It was a real. Dog. For my plug, I'm going to mention starting next week, we have, guess what, two new podcasts coming. It's true. On Monday, we will have our first podcast about the revival of Twin Peaks by our own Dan Blaurogi, as previously recently mentioned, as a co-host of Monica, the podcast. He will be covering that for us. We reached out to him because he covered all of the first two seasons of Twin Peaks for us at Television Without Pity, and he is going back to the town and the peaks and the weirdness. Can't wait to see what he does with it. And also...
Wait, you didn't say what it was called.
Oh, so bad at this.
Yeah, not great.
Go ahead.
It's called Who Killed Laura Podcast.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Also coming next week is Wine with an H and Roses, a Bachelor Nation podcast from Jeff Drake and Stephanie Early Green, both of whom have covered the show for us in the past. Of course, we are starting with The Bachelorette because that is the show that is premiering next week, but hopefully we will be able to get them to cover all of the various meats in the Bachelor stew. Gross. Anyway, look out for both of those next week. Yeah. Thank you so much. I am done.
All right. It is time for Alex. What do you got?
So what I was going to talk about is the Mick. So the sitcom on Fox starring Caitlin Olsen from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's finished, just wrapped up the first season, but it's something that I haven't really heard anybody talk about. And it was the sitcom I looked forward most to watching this year. So I wanted to just give a little bit of a shout out for that one, because I know it's been renewed for season two. Just as the quick synopsis for anybody who hasn't seen it. Caitlin Olsen's character plays an aunt who has to take care of her niece and nephews after her sister and husband are arrested for fraud and tax evasion. And I mean, we were apprehensive about starting it because the character she plays, Mickey, isn't really that removed from Caitlin Olsen's character on It's Always Sunny. It's just like a slightly smarter version of Dee. But what we ended up finding with the show is that it's really funny. The kids are funny, which is a nice place to go. And the show isn't afraid to make fun of the kids, which is the thing I think I enjoyed the most about it. There's really funny physical comedy with Mick's boyfriend, Jimmy, who pretty much is maimed every single week. And the show almost makes sport of how they can beat Jimmy up in different ways every season. So if you enjoy that really bloody physical comedy, it's for you. Awesome. And there's an episode in particular I recommend checking out, The Balloon, where it involves a birthday party for the youngest kid with a troubled clown with some deep, deep personal problems. And it just kind of goes from there. It's pretty dark, but like I said, we really quite enjoyed it.
Awesome.
And then for my plug, so I work a pretty standard office job and have nothing of my own to plug, but I'm going to plug Sarah's podcast, The Blotter Presents.
Yes.
All right. Fine.
Sorry.
Allow it.
I am enjoying it so, so much because it speaks to, and this is what I had sort of said to Sarah, it speaks to that part of me that when I had my, you know, year-long Canadian maternity leave, when I was feeding the young child every morning, I would always have on, you know, American Justice and City Confidential of A&E. And then when they disappeared, I was devastated. So what I'm really enjoying about this podcast in particular is being introduced to new series and new documentaries. And I have found so much that way that I wouldn't have otherwise found. So for any of the true crime buffs who enjoy those series and documentaries, I highly, highly recommend The Blotter Presents.
Nice.
Very nice.
Me too.
Speaking of The Blotter Presents, it's Sarah D. Bunting.
Indeed. I'm actually going to talk about a one-hour documentary airing on PBS starting at the end of this week called It's, quote, Just, unquote, Anxiety. You'll have to check your local listings, and I think this might be one of those that gets dumped in, like, big markets secondary PBS stations. Like, here it's not on WNET, which is the flagship. It's on, like, NJTV 51 next weekend at 2 in the morning. But it's airing around Mental Health Awareness Month. And as a lifelong, basically, anxiety and panic disorder sufferer, it's been gratifying to see the discussion taking place around 13 Reasons Why and around depression and suicide and how these diseases silence their sufferers. I mean, suicide is not, you know, obviously, duh. But it's gratifying for me, having had anxiety disorder basically as long as I can remember, to see a documentary about my people, like other people who've had to fight to stay in their own lives and who have wondered, you know, whether it's worth it and if anything's ever going to change. It's exhausting and painful, and you feel a lot of shame because you can't, quote, just get over it. It's very isolating, and the subjects of It's Just Anxiety did the rest of us maladaptive fighter-flighters a mitzvah appearing in this film. I wish there had been something like it when I was a kid. I definitely recommend it if you or someone you love is sort of bogged down in panic disorder, OCD, or anything related. And if you're within the sound of my voice and adding the numbers in a license plate in front of you in traffic up to 22, just for example, and wondering why you can't just be normal, Buncey sees you. Hang in there and try to get the help you need quickly before Paul Ryan ruins all of our lives.
Oh, so that'll probably be on my app, plug, though, too, right? On the PBS app?
Yes, it should be. So if you have the PBS app, that's a good place to look for it. And we will put a link in the show notes as well.
And you should just get that app. It's good to have. Yeah. And they have stuff. And it's free.
Yeah, especially for history buffs, if you like American Experience and kind of falling asleep to the dulcet tones of something about Teddy Roosevelt, I definitely recommend it.
Oh, I did that last night.
Oh, yeah. It really is soothing, right? Like, we use the Roosevelts as a sleep aid. I know it's whatever. We're weird. And that's an insight into my marriage. Anyway, my plug is twofold. I appeared last week on the Law & Order podcast. These Are Their Stories. Please. I was talking about a criminal intent episode, co-starring Samantha Buck, because Eames was on maternity leave. So that was a lot of fun. I was glad to get to go back to that podcast. And coming up, I will be on a West Wing podcast hosted by Lonnie Diane Rich called Jed Bartlett Is My President. I'll be talking about season 2, episodes 1 and 2 in The Shadow of Two Gunmen. So keep an eye out for those in our Twitter feed, which is at Previously TV.
I have three things today.
What?
Three things. Number one, when I had to fly to Oahu for the stupid test, which, by the way, was just a stress test. It was just like running on a treadmill and getting injected with radioactive goo and all this sort of stuff. Anyways, it involved a lot of sitting in a waiting room. Like, you would do one thing for 5 minutes and then you have to wait an hour in the waiting room for the next part of it. It was very, very, very annoying. But on the TV for the whole duration almost of my stay there was this show called Judge Hatchet, which is like fourth generation People's Court. But it's with like this no-nonsense LA judge, and the people that she gets on the show have such stupid problems, and they're all just basically like, she's a bitch, no, I hate my neighbor stuff. That's sort of fascinating in a way. Like, you can watch like two or three episodes was my fill. I feel like I never want to watch it again. But one of the cases was my neighbor put the type of garbage you're not allowed to put in your garbage can in my garbage can overnight. So I got a $500 fine from the private garbage disposal service. Parentheses, what? How's that work? And then in retaliation, she like ripped open a garbage bag and threw it all over across the yard or something like that. Sure. These are the types of cases that we're dealing with. So that was an education, finding out, about, where the people court, you know, how that's evolved and where we're at right now with that. And generally more entertaining, you know, than, you know, like, I paid for this TV repair and the TV doesn't work. And Judge Wapner's like, what's a TV? I'm old. I watched three episodes because I could not change the channel because the remote was behind a guy's head and he was sleeping. And I really wasn't comfortable getting anywhere near him because he was old. You know, something would have happened. Judge Hatchet, three episodes. Sure, why not? I said three things, but it's only one thing. We're going to save everything else for later because nothing worked. So here we go.
But first, before the canon,
yes,
we have a birthday greeting for Tamar.
Dina and Renana want to wish their sister, Tamar Fox, a very happy birthday and many happy returns of the day.
Renana and Dina feel Tamar is a whip-smart, creative, compassionate woman who lives her values and that they're lucky to have her as a sister. Aw.
Mm-hmm. Aw. Since Tamar is also a contributor to Previously.tv, we can vouch for her creativity and can reach back through some of the work she's done for us to mark the occasion.
May she enjoy a year without deprivations like the one suffered by the inmates at Litchfield on Orange is the New Black.
May she enjoy many life-affirming interactions with adorable pooches like Daphne of Frasier.
And may she not... okay, there's not really anything that festive about the History Channel remake of Roots. Never mind. Moving on!
From Dina, Renana, and all of us here,
Happy birthday!
All right, everybody, it is time for the Callan. Callan? What the hell?
Cannon. Just keep going. Push through, Dave. Push through.
I can't. I got so little sleep.
It's what's
it is time for the Cannon. Alex has our submission this week, and I believe she is trying to restore the good name of a show recently inducted into the NONAC. Take it away, Alex.
Indeed.
Thank you. I do not disagree with the NONAC, by the way. I'm going to preface that with my... for my canon submission this week. I'll be presenting 6 Feet Under, Season 5, Episode 10, All Alone. This was the third last episode of the final season of the series. What I think makes this episode canon worthy is that it doesn't try to pretend the characters aren't who they are, but it reminds us that what makes them true and honest and human, which I think was really one of the big themes of the series. We open on the episode with Ruth sobbing into a pillow, only to hear Nate's voice from the other room, discussing death with who appears to be Nathaniel. Of course, to borrow a term well used in the recent NONAC submission, it's a fake out, and Ruth awakes from her dream. Then we see Claire licking the remnants of drugs from a baggie. Brenda's parenting Maya through her own grief. And David is obsessively planning and organizing the details associated with Nate's death with a to-do list that warms my type A heart. Also, David, it is Nordstrom, not Nordstrom's. A gay man would know this. The opening segment is not typical for the show. There's no white card or specific death to the open. What felt true about this opening, though, is that it's all the characters dealing with their grief in really the truest form of themselves. Ruth is in denial. Claire's medicating with drugs or whatever other easy and self-harming way is presented to her. Brenda's really just trying to make do, and David's trying to deal with his grief through control. I think the episode can almost be divided into two halves, the before Nate's funeral and after/during Nate's funeral. And I'm roughly going to actually try to then present the characters through the two halves of the episode rather than give a chronological story. So we'll start with everybody's least favorite character, Rico. As usual, Rico is all about Rico. He's focused on how nobody can now stop David's plans for expanding the funeral home. And yes, I'll concede that Rico sometimes got a raw deal in this business relationship with this family. But he's also such a shit about so many things throughout the series that you really don't, you know, feel much for him as this progresses. But at Nate's funeral, and I think despite him being a shithead for so much of the series, and while he gave, you know, on paper a pretty typical funeral eulogy, what came through in his delivery of his eulogy is that it became evident that how much he cared and respected Nate. You could really get across that he saw Nate as a friend and loved him. And I think it was a nice note for his character towards the end of the series, particularly as, you know, the last couple of seasons didn't bode so well for him. So moving on to Keith and the kids. Keith is, as usual, as solid as he always is. He's a rock. He's the voice of reason for David and their boys. And he's dedicated to building the family that David so desperately wanted. And Anthony and Darrell are super sweet when they're taking care of David. I didn't clip it, but when Darrell says to David, when they're trying to sort of nurse him in his grief, but I even loaded some smooth jazz on my iPad for you to listen to. It was so sweet. And I just loved it. Like, it was just such a nice moment for David to have this family. So, and Claire herself finally finds a nice, stable guy in Chris Messina, a.k.a. Danny Castellano, a.k.a. Ted, who's a Republican and listens to Kelly Clarkson. Still, typical spoiled brat Claire gets Ted to drive her around on the day of the funeral to avoid dealing with the situation, which is another Claire trademark throughout the series. But after a conversation with Ted about his own shitty sister, she realizes she loved Nate and ultimately decides to go to the funeral. Mind you, she shows up in jeans and a t-shirt. As she helps with Nate's body at the burial, we get a sense that Claire gets the changes she needs to make. And it's later the vision of Nate that actually pushes her to finally take some control and some ambition in her life through the later part of the last couple episodes of the series. And with that, Claire does what she couldn't do earlier in the episode. She fondly recalls a memory of Nate, and it's quote unquote teenage Nate, who looks about 40, the night that Kurt Cobain died, and he offers what must have been like 12-year-old Claire pot. But it seems like a moment that really rings true for their relationship through the series. The first clip I've pulled for Ruth is actually really a Bettina clip played by the lovely Kathy Bates. So Dave, if you can roll clip one, please.
Let me make you something else. Yogurt? Oatmeal? How about a scotch and soda?
Is it too soon for another pill?
When did you take your last one?
3 hours ago.
Sure, go ahead. Don't worry, you get addicted. I have a lot of experience getting people through withdrawal.
So I chose this clip for two reasons. The first is that I think Ruth finding relationships outside of the relationships throughout the series of her husbands and her children, and it's ultimately sort of what moves her beyond her tiring, you know, self-inflicted drowning responsibility, and in the end is what leads her to find that happiness and fulfillment at the end of the series. And she finds that, I think, through Bettina towards the end. But I think we also all need a Bettina in our lives when times are tough, offering us both pills and booze. Okay. But back to the typical Ruth. Ugh, poor Ruth. She's truer to herself and there's an early scene about her being really hard on David about Nate's death and questioning what more David should have and could have done differently. And Ruth continues in the first part of the episode with her victim shit, complaining that she wants Nate in the family plot, even though it's not what he wanted, and really making both David and Brenda feel pretty miserable in the process. And then there's another scene where she starts asking Bettina, why didn't I have a cell phone? Why did Claire make me get my hair cut? But when she starts to break down with Bettina in that scene, it's real and it's heart-wrenching. And you're brought back to that this is a woman who lost her son. And no matter how she feels and or how she's portraying herself, there's a lot of heartbreak there. And the scene with Ruth and the minister is everything, Ruth. It's what makes her great and makes her infuriating all rolled into one. And that is clip two.
I don't think it's helpful to see it as a message to you.
Then why would it happen that way? Unless there really is no God.
It's natural to be angry. But maybe it's best to view God as a light through this dark time as opposed to seeing him as the cause of it.
God is an asshole.
When we move to start talking about David, there's an early scene in the episode of him preparing Nate's body. David has a vision of the ghost of Nathaniel telling him what we've heard David hear from his father Nathaniel the entire series. You are no one's favorite. Nate was a man. Nate was the favorite. David was not. The conflict that divides Ruth and David comes to a head early in this episode too, over Nate's body. We as the audience see what they need in each other, and I think they know it too, but that doesn't stop them from continuing to hurt each other. And that's clip three.
Clearly something went terribly wrong.
Think I killed him? Is that what you're trying to get me to say?
How dare you speak to me that way?
How dare you? I lost him too, Mom! All you've been doing is accusing me of doing the wrong thing. At least I was there.
Fuck.
And thank you to Claire for walking in and summing up the relationship between Ruth and David. So I agree with everything that was presented in the recent NONAC canon submission about David's attacker storyline. And I am still annoyed to see the red hoodie all over this episode. But I do think the red hoodie works here within the structure of the show. It represents David's insecurities and his fear and his grief manifested into a ghost. At the funeral, the hoodie appears and David breaks down while talking about Nate as his childhood protector. I think for better or for worse, we know they loved each other and that David is losing someone who played the role of protector from those insecurities, those fears. Between the funeral and the burial, David and Ruth have their moment as she comforts him post-funeral breakdown. Ruth says something that I think applies to many family relationships and definitely my own in clip four.
You can go down if you want.
I want to stay with you.
Sorry for what I said.
I'm sorry. You lost him too. You and I are really the most alike, you know. And sometimes maybe it makes it hard.
So So when David is panic-stricken at the burial, and hiding in the car, Ruth insists on David's presence because she knows he'll regret not being part of it. It's a moment where they realize, and we realize too, that these two people need each other, and really that we need our family for better or for worse. So before I talk about the more serious Brenda storyline, there are some great scenes we've come to expect between Brenda and her mother in this episode, which I didn't quite have time to clip, but there's a fantastic one with Margaret making a big sobbing scene in the middle of the funeral of her daughter's estranged husband. But throughout the episode, their exchanges are, as usual, fantastic. But anyway, what we know is that Brenda knows Nate. She knows his flaws. She bore the brunt of them more than anyone else in this series. And Nate's flaws and her own fears continue to haunt her now through his ghost in clip 5.
You just wanted me to plug you with your own baby. Now you've got that. So you can drop the wrong little wife routine.
Why are you saying this?
You could have married Joe if you wanted to be with somebody who really wanted to be with you. But deep down, you know that anybody who really wants to be with you is a fucking idiot.
Shut up!
Because just like everybody else in your psychotic family, you have to destroy everything and everyone you love.
Just leave me alone, okay? Just leave me alone.
At the end of the episode, friggin' Billy shows up. Now, love me some Jeremy Sisto. But, ugh, Billy. I could have done without some Billy. But, as I say so much now, Billy's presence allows Brenda to finally break down like she needed to. It allows her to be sad about what she knows she's lost, both before Nate died and after he died. So I'm going to end with Nate, because I think that's really what is just so well done in this episode, and not in spite of, but perhaps because of his death. Maggie shows up to Brenda's before the funeral to apologize about Nate being with her when he died, or when he became his big illness, and to bring a quiche. And a side note there, if my husband ever dies, nobody bring me a quiche. It is friggin' disgusting. You bring me booze and ice cream and pills like Bettina would do. So Brenda in this scene is completely 100% Brenda, and I am here for it. She nails Nate, and I'll let her sum up it pretty well for you in the next clip, clip 6.
What is this, some kind of Quaker thing? You fuck someone's husband to death and then you bring him a quiche? Would you please just admit it? It would be such a relief to know when exactly my marriage turned into a total fucking lie.
It was not like that.
Like what? God!
It's not like anything you're imagining. Nate loved you.
I don't need you to tell me how my husband felt about me. Even if he was pissed off at me, he certainly wasn't in love with you, even if he said he was. Nate could be very convincing that way. But all he ever wanted was someone who could make him feel like he was a better man than he actually was. Could have been anyone.
What's so strong, I think, about this in this episode is that we get the juxtaposition of Nate from what I think might seem like an odd source, but I think when you think about it, a source that makes sense, George. George understands Nate, and when I reflected on it, I think they're actually really quite similar. And what George really effectively does at Nate's funeral is remind us that he wasn't just the self-absorbed jerk that we often saw him as. And that is clip 7, please.
The loss of a young person is always a terrible blow. But in this case, it's even more cruel because Nate was an idealist. And he struggled all through his life to be a good man. He wasn't perfect. Then who among us is? And he never gave up on himself. The people he loved. Or even love itself. In all its vexing, beautiful forms.
Where I think I, and I think many others, had difficulties with the last couple seasons of 6 Feet Under is that it really felt like it's just miserable people being miserable. This episode for me is everyone at their purest and most true to their characters. I think we needed this episode at the end of the series to really actually care about these characters again, to remember that they're not just terrible self-involved people. It's their vulnerabilities and their love for each other that ultimately shines through towards the end of this episode through the death of Nate. The episode evolves well from the opening segment of everybody at their worst, but by the end, you share their pain and remember why you were drawn to them in the first place. Sometimes what makes us bad is also what makes us good. The episode touches on all the themes at the heart of the series. We don't choose our family. We don't necessarily choose who we love, but we live with our decisions. And the ones you love and need the most are there for you when you need them the most. Through birth, love, and death, and everything else in between. Thank you very much, and I hope you consider this for the canon.
I'll go first. I was not sure. I really, after we got to the end of rewatching this episode, was like, I can't wait to hear what she says. And man, you really 100% convinced me. Because when it got at the beginning, I was like, this is really a lot of Nate, particularly for an episode he's not even in. Like, he was one of the most loathsome characters on a show, as you say, that was like kind of tended to be full of them, particularly toward the end. And then like the prospect of sitting through like everyone talking about what Nate meant to them is like, Nate sucks. I don't want to hear any of this, but you're right. It works for all the reasons that you say. And that, I mean, honestly, that summation from Brenda when Maggie comes to the door with her stupid quiche and she like sums him up so perfectly, everything that was wrong with him is like, It's like such a breath of fresh air. And then the stuff around Ruth and her, you're so right too, that like what we would all want in that moment being Ruth is like a coven of menopausal women to come over with like booze and pills and make everything better. Like, that's what I want right now, frankly. The other thing that you didn't really touch on, but that bothered me, but I thought worked for the episode in terms of what it was trying to do that you've laid out so well, is like how much all of Nate's specific funereal wishes for himself are such a pain in the ass to everyone. And like, they're so Nate, they're so showy, they're so bleh. And like, all it does is put the attention on the fact that nothing is happening the way people are expecting it to, or that will be comforting for them. It's like one final fuck you from him, like from the grave. It's like
Nate,
go ahead.
Sorry, the terribleness of Nate's like ego funeral made it onto the cutting room floor as I was going for time, but it was there. It was just like, fucking Nate. Of course, exactly. He would want this ego funeral in front of a tree with nobody there, where there's no cell phone service and Brenda's car dies. Like, of course.
Exactly. But that's like, yeah. it's so perfect for what the episode is trying to accomplish and like the final button that it's putting on Nate's dumb, infuriating, but in its way, meaningful and important life. So yeah, this is an excellent presentation. You really won me over. Very, very well done. Sarah.
Yeah, my notes were like, really, Alex, a 58-minute episode in which Nate still isn't dead yet, and there's Michael fucking Weston? Like, I was really considering narming you for this, but just kidding. But I remember this episode very well from when it originally aired, because there was something about David, like, the difficulty he has, like, put it, like, physically taking part in this ritual. It is such wonderful acting from Michael C. Hall, mm-hmm. who was great all throughout the series and was given some real dog shit, as we all know from the No Knack. Mm-hmm. But there was something that I related to so strongly for whatever reason about that scene and all of his scenes, just trying to reconcile everything about that he felt good and bad about his brother, who was the favorite. And I mean, it was really just heartbreaking, and it has held up as a very powerful performance. And Brenda's mother, I don't know. I love her, like the sobbing at the funeral. And then she's like, that line she has where she's like, one piece of brie and everyone goes berserk about like pregnancy rules compared to when she was pregnant. I mean, there is in this episode, as with, you know, trying to honestly or truthfully honor people we love who have died, there's everything that's great about this series, and there's everything that's fucking annoying about this series all in one package. But there are some wonderful moments in it and some scathing moments in it. And the best part about it, in my opinion, may be that Nate is dead. I hated that character, and I had completely forgotten the flashback to his being performatively, like, cry voicey about Kurt Cobain dying. Ugh. Like, he knew him personally. And it just brought all those, like, overwhelming urges to kick through the surface of the TV and kick Nate's balls up into the top of his skull. All of that came rushing back. So I don't know what that says about the show or about Peter Krause. It's taken really a long time for me to get past Nate in his work. But I think there's something to be said for, like, I don't know if canon episodes are necessarily supposed to be, like, all pleasurable. I think there's something to be said for the, like, a strong reaction in any direction. And this is absolutely the, like, this is such a typical episode of Six Feet Under in both good and bad ways. So, great presentation. Next time, pick a 42-minuter. And, yeah, Dave.
So it's like taking your castor oil? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Narm.
I'm on 1 hour sleep. Let's vote. Tara.
Yay.
Sarah.
Yay.
I honestly thought that I had already asked you for your vote there. Gosh, I'm so...
We did not sleep.
I thought it was okay. Marginal no for me. But that doesn't matter because that's 2-1. Clips, please. Thank you. Where's the stuff? Here we go.
Oh, Lordy.
Six Feet Under, Season 5, Episode 10, All Alone. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
We will get to the winner and loser in just a second, but first, we have a message for Brian.
Brian is graduating this week, so his wife Maureen wants to celebrate the milestone Extra Hot Great Style with our top 5 TV graduation moments.
Let's count them down. Number 5, Marge Simpson's graduation from her court-ordered parenting class. Turns out she didn't test positive for crack and PCP.
Number 4, at her high school graduation, Felicity Porter got one cute guy to sign her yearbook, and it literally changed the course of her life as she decided to follow him to a whole other college that she was planning to attend. That is quite an autograph, Ben Covington.
Number 3, the Gossip Girl grad, in which the titular Gossip Girl stole focus from everyone's big moment with a text blast giving out her own class superlatives. Man, Nate was class whore.
Number 2, Buffy the Vampire Slayer's graduation completely and non-metaphorically destroyed not just Sunnydale High, but also West Beverly, which shared the same physical plant as the Scoob's alma mater, and speaking of the Zipsters...
Oh, number 1, of course, there's the ultimate TV graduation, the one where Donna Martin graduates even though she broke the rules and totally should have had to go to summer school as we all agree!
I could not agree more, as you know. Seriously, though, Brian, we're sure you earned your moment with hard work and perfect rectitude. So for Maureen and all of us here, congratulations Brian!
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Our winner is Jessica St. Clair, who announced last week not only that she beat breast cancer, but that when Playing House comes back for its 3rd season on the USA Network, they are working it into Emma's storyline, and I'm very eager to see how that plays out. So congratulations to her. Continuing good health. I'm so glad that she's such a queen that she is bringing us more excellent work from her in all of her various endeavors, and very relieved that she's okay.
And loser of the week.
The Deadwood movie, since Powers Booth has died at the age of 68. R.I.P. Psy.
I read that someone tweeted this week that originally he was cast to play Al Swearengen. Dave, did you know this?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
And then he like got sick, so they recast him with someone else. And then David Milch was like, he's still got to be in the show. So he just created the Cy Tolliver character so that he would still be part of
it. Yeah, which is,
who knows?
I don't think that's going to really, I don't mean this to speak ill of the actor, but like that character wasn't I feel essential to what was going on in Deadwood. Like, he obviously was elsewhere in 1.5 or something like that, you know, and knowing that origin makes sense. But I don't think it's, you know, obviously if they had him in the movie, they're going to write around him, but I don't think it's going to be hard to write around that character.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, I think it'll still happen if it was going to happen. And we all know that's never going to happen.
I really, even though they have a script, I have to say, even before.
Yeah, I'm not putting money on that.
Speaking of things you shouldn't put money on, do you know what time it is?
Game time?
It's legally binding game time.
Oh!
Uh-oh.
You know, this episode has its technical and mouthy errors, but generally, before what I just said, when I made an error saying error, it's been going pretty good, considering I have slept in like 36 hours. Okay, game time. This is the eighth game time of the season. The season scores are Tara with 4, could win the season today, Sarah with 2, and Value Guess with 1. Today we're playing more episodes from frequent contributor Andrew Rabin, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of his choosing. Very simple game. I'm going to give you 2 shows. You tell me which one has the most episodes.
No hints.
Shit. 1 point apiece.
Okay.
All right.
Good. Yep.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going to play first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Okay. Tara.
Yep.
Alex.
Yep.
Sarah is our order. Are we ready to play more episodes?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Tara.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
King of Queens. Everybody loves Raymond.
King of Queens.
Shen. King of Queens, 207. Everybody loves Raymond, 210. Very close. Starting off with a tough one. Men of a Certain Age, Alex, versus Gideon's Crossing.
I have heard of neither of those shows. Oh,
Men of a Certain Age was Raymond from Everybody's Love Raymond, right?
Yep.
Captain Holt and Scott Bakula, blah.
That's right. Yep.
And Gideon's Crossing was also with... wasn't Gideon's Crossing?
Yes, yes.
Or was that City of Angels?
Well. Okay. Oh, Andre Brower. Okay, let's go Gideon's Crossing.
By 2 episodes,
shit.
Men of a Certain Age, very close. Okay. The New Adventures of Old Christine, Sarah, versus Arrested Development.
Arrested Development.
Shit!
New Adventures of Old Christine, 88. Arrested Development, 68.
Oh.
Ally McBeal, okay. Brothers and Sisters.
Oh. Ally McBeal? Oh, God.
112 Yay. To 109. The Flying Nun versus Revenge.
Revenge.
Nice.
Correct. 7 episodes more. Parks and Rec, The West Wing.
Ooh.
West Wing.
Correct. Nice. 125 to 156.
Cripes.
Sports Night, The Newsroom.
Sports Night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Those HBO seasons, short 25 for Newsroom, 45 Sports Night. Desperate Housewives, Melrose Place.
Oh, shit.
Hmm.
Is that one to me?
Yeah.
Right? Melrose Place.
Nice.
Yes, by quite a bit. Desperate Housewives, 180. Melrose Place went 226.
Ooh.
Dynasty versus Dallas.
Oh, shit.
Ooh.
Dynasty.
Oh no! That's what I was.
220 to 357.
Jeez!
Oh my dang! God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dallas 2012 versus 90210
2008.
90210. Correct. 40 to 114. God. Dawson's Creek versus Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl.
Ooh, Dawson's Creek by 7. 128, 121. Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23 versus Ben and Kate. Oh, remember Ben and Kate?
Yeah.
No. Fuck. sure, Ben and Kate.
Don't Trust the D got 26. Ben and Kate only lasted 16. Married versus Mad Love. Mad Love. Never heard of it.
Mad Love.
Mad Love.
The fuck?
That might be a clue.
Okay, I'm going to say Married.
23-13. Mad Love. Scrubs versus Roseanne.
Roseanne.
222-182. 40 more episodes. Tremé versus Wayward Pines.
Fucking seriously right now?
The disgust put on Tremé.
The Hallmark show, Tremé.
Tremé.
Yeah, 36 yep. versus 20 for Wayward Pines. Entourage, Sex in the City.
Sex in the City.
What? Entourage by 2 episodes.
My God.
Dicks.
That's a shocker.
All right, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
Cashmere Mafia versus Lipstick Jungle.
Of course.
Oh, God. Lipstick Jungle?
Yeah.
Nice.
20 episodes for 20 episodes for Lipstick Jungle. What was
one of them has to be Asian. Can they be good at their jobs?
20 for Lipstick Jungle, 7. Only 7 for Cashmere Mafia. Suddenly Susan versus Veronica's Closet.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Oh, that's tough. It's tough to even return to that dark time. Suddenly Susan.
Yep.
Nice.
91 versus 66. 19. Battle of the Friends, post-Friends projects. Mm-hmm. Joey versus Dirt.
Oh. Ooh, Joey?
Yeah, okay. Over double. 46 somehow. Really?
It got renewed. I think it was like it they was around and, the yeah. time of the writer's strike, maybe?
Versus Dirt, only 20.
Yeah.
Only 20. All right. Bring us into our first score break.
Nope. Alex and then Sarah.
Bringing us almost into our first score break.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. I see what I did. Cougar Town versus Sons of Anarchy.
Ooh.
Both dealing
Sons
with
of Anarchy.
People that defend their territory well. But I'm afraid Cougar Town had more episodes.
Damn it.
That's 102-92. Mm. All right. Huh. So Felicity versus Blossom.
Seriously?
Yes.
It's yeah.
always seriously.
Blossom.
Nice.
84 episodes for Felicity, 114 episodes for Blossom. Now it is time for our first score break time.
Okay, extremely close game. Alex and Sarah both with 4. I have 5.
Ooh, all right. So that means, Alex, you are in.
Oh, no.
The Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. You must get half of these 6 Trivial Pursuit questions from the TV box from the mid-80s correct to get 2 points. Okay?
Yep.
What WJM staffer graduated from Leif Erikson High School in Roseburg, Minnesota?
I don't know. Rosen Island?
really close. Is it the Betty White character?
Mary Richards.
Oh, no.
Webs.
What cartoon show was inspired by 1958's The Chipmunk Song?
Alvin and the Chipmunks?
The Alvin Show.
Boo.
What's the CBS stock market host? Sorry. What's the... Oh, my God. Did I say CBS? God, I'm so... Guys, no sleep. What's the PBS stock market show hosted by... Oh, my God. Louis Rukeyser.
Louis Rukeyser.
Rukeyser?
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
Sorry.
And I'm just going to let you know...
Princeton 55.
Oh.
One of the S's is a dollar sign, and this show is not Vegas.
I have no idea. I couldn't even get
Wall Dollar Treat Week.
Lame.
I'm sorry, I didn't get
All right, you're getting all 3 of these correct. What former talk show host was once quizmaster for Bank on the Stars, Place the Face, and Up to Par, P-A-A-R?
Jack Parr?
Hey! Come back.
What's visible in the breast pocket of the star's jacket during opening credits of Perry Mason?
What's letter opener?
Letter opener. How about a handkerchief?
That makes much more sense.
What rank was Sergeant Joe Friday promoted to in 1959?
Corporal?
Lieutenant. No points for you. No. All right, here we go. We're back to it. Tara.
Yes.
Clarissa Explains It All versus Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Ooh, Sabrina.
Oh, by a lot. 65 versus 163. Bewitched versus I Dream of Jeannie. Alex.
Jeannie.
No!
254 to 139.
Wow.
Mad Men versus The Sopranos. Sopranos was a mafia themed show on HBO.
Sarah, you should check it out.
Yes, pretty good.
Tell me more. Yeah. Sopranos.
Mad Men. 92 to.
Oh, right, sure. Okay.
To 86.
Gosh.
30 Rock versus The Larry Sanders Show.
30 Rock.
Yeah. 138 to 89. That's still 89 is a big run for
for an HBO show.
Full House, Family Matters.
Full House.
Family Matters. 192 to 215.
I am shocked.
Oh my god.
What?
Boy Meets World, The Wonder Years.
Wonder Years.
Boy Meets World, 158 to 115.
I'm shocked again.
Happy
Boys.
Days. Happy Days. Love Boat.
Oh, God. Happy Days?
Yeah, by five episodes. Yeah. 255 to 250. Commander in Chief, 1600 Penn.
Commander in Chief.
Correct. Nice. Five episodes more. The Comedians, The New Normal. In the weeds
here,
people.
These words are in English, and yet. Fuck it. The New Normal.
Yep.
Dang.
Comedians 13, New Normal 22. Rhoda, Lou Grant.
Rhoda?
No, dang. Surprising. Rhoda 110. Dang. Lou Grant 114.
Wow.
Wow. Covert Affairs, In Plain Sight. Not the same show.
In Plain Sight?
Covert Affairs 75, In Plain Sight 61. White Collar, Burn Notice.
Oh, boy.
Oh, is this to me?
Ooh, yeah.
Shit. Burn Notice?
Right.
So much confidence.
30 episodes spread, 81 to 111. Psych. Wow. Royal Pains.
Psych.
But not by as much as you might think. Mm. How many more do you think?
I don't know, 20?
Yeah, about 20, yeah. 121 to 104. Slings and Arrows. Cop Rock.
What?
Slings and Arrows.
Yeah, 18 nice. To 11.
Gotta be.
Good Morning Miami. Life with Bonnie.
Ooh. Good Morning Miami.
Down by four. 40 to 44. What was Life with Bonnie?
Oh.
Bonnie, one of the Bonnie Hunt
yeah,
at
that's right.
sitcom.
Like
that
every season
out.
She had one for like five years, right?
For a while. Yep.
Community versus Glee.
Oh, God. Glee.
Correct. 121 to 110 as of this game time for Community. Fucking show that won't die. Law and Order LA, Criminal Minds, Suspect Behavior.
Oh.
Criminal Minds.
Oh, Criminal Minds, Suspect Behavior got 13 episodes. Law and Order LA, 22.
Hmm.
All right, JAG versus CSI Miami.
Answer this question, Navely.
Well, I mean, I feel like JAG is actually still on somewhere, technically, but I'm still going to say CSI Miami.
Kane!
JAG, 227 to 232. Very close.
Oof.
All right, this is for... you, Tara.
Yep.
Xena, Warrior Princess versus Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh. Xena?
Xena, 134. Buffy, 144.
Wow.
Hannibal versus Aquarius.
Hannibal.
Correct. Nice. 39 to 26. Bring us into our second score break. Lost versus Dharma and Greg. That's pretty funny. I see what you did there. Clever. Fuck. Lost versus Dharma and Greg.
Yeah, no, I heard you. Lost.
Nice.
By two episodes. Lost 121.
Really?
Dharma and Greg, 119.
Wow. All right.
Well, still extremely close. Sarah has 8. I have 10. Alex has 7.
All right,
back
Alex.
Back of the equalizer zone.
This is so embarrassing.
What
it's
militaristics?
Not embarrassing. It's because you're very, very young. You're much
and
younger
also,
than the rest
TV
of us.
This is TV from the 60s, so
much.
Don't worry about it. You're okay.
All right, let's go.
All right.
I'm ready.
What militaristic Star Trek baddies, and I'm reading that correctly, first appeared in the episode Balance of Terror?
Is it more than one?
What militaristic Star Trek baddies first appeared in the episode Balance of Terror?
So like a race,
a group.
Of, a race of baddies, probably.
Yeah, yes.
Oh. The Klingons?
The Romulans.
I think they're good, though.
No, Klingons are kind of bad.
In the old days, they were bad.
In the old days, they were bad. Before they got their head stuff. What newsman said that calling the Challenger disaster a major malfunction was the understatement of the year?
Rather.
Rokaw.
No.
What city does Amen take place in?
Amen. Atlanta.
Philadelphia.
No.
Whose yell is Carol Burnett famed for imitating?
I have no idea.
Well, how many famous yells are there? There's a different question.
I still don't know.
Tarzan. Which of the Three Stooges' favorite shtick consisted of woo, woo, woo and three beat finger snap?
Mo.
Charlie. Which honeymooner's brainstorm was diet pizza?
What was that? Oh, I don't know. I can't come up with that.
Ralph Cramden. All right, back to the game, guys.
Oh, my God. It's so embarrassing.
Grace Under Fire versus Rescue Me.
I get it.
Grace Under Fire.
Correct. Little House on the Prairie versus the Waltons.
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
Little House on the Prairie.
No, Waltons.
Ah.
222 versus 204. Bones versus Castle. Bones versus Castle. I'm going to start speeding Bones. This game up. Just so you know.
Bones.
Nice.
246 to 173. Dick Van Dyke versus Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Mary Tyler Moore.
By 10. Hot in Cleveland versus The Cleveland Show.
Hot in Cleveland.
Yes, by 40 episodes. The Golden Girls versus I Love Lucy.
Oh, yikes. Golden Girls.
Golden Girls 180. I Love Lucy 181.
That bitch!
Oh!
Frasier, and I don't know, I'm Frasier.
Yeah.
Versus Murphy Brown.
Frasier.
Yes, 264, 247. St. Elsewhere, Private Practice.
Private Practice.
Seen Elsewhere. That show was on forever. 137 to 111. L.A. Law, The Practice.
Oh, shit.
Ooh.
Oh. L.A. Law.
Yes,
nice.
By 3, 171. Boston Legal, Boston Public.
Fuck. Boston Legal.
Yes, by 30. Nope, sorry, 20. Okay. 101. Wonderfalls. Versus Pushing Daisies.
Oh, God damn it. Shut up, Brian Fuller.
Pushing Daisies.
Correct. 22 to 13. And that seems like too many.
Yeah.
Chicago Hope. Send your angry letters to, well, say Alex. Chicago Hope versus Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Whoa.
Oh, man. I got to go Dr. Q.
You would be correct by 8. 149 to 144. One. Murder, She Wrote, NYPD Blue.
Fuck me. Murder, She Wrote.
Yes, by 3. Wow. Outlaw, Blind Justice.
Bad. Blind Justice.
By 5. Outlaw, 8. What is Outlaw? Anybody?
Don't even remember.
No idea.
Outlaw had 8 episodes. That's okay. How good it was. Weeds versus Breaking Bad.
Oh, boy.
Oh, shitsky. Breaking Bad.
No, not even close. Weeds 102, Breaking Bad 62.
Yeah, Weeds was on
forever. Shit.
The Shield versus Monk.
Oh, man. Monk?
Yes, 125 to 88. Stacked versus Pitch.
Okay. Stacked?
Correct. Stacked, 19. Pitch, just 10. All right. This is to Sarah, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Take us into our score break. The Jeffersons versus All in the Family.
Oh, boy.
Oh. The Jeffersons.
Yes. Nice. The spinoff lasted longer than the original. 253 to 205. Scores, please start.
All right. Well, I have 16. Sarah has 12. Alex has 11.
Sorry, Alex.
It's her favorite thing.
It's your very favorite thing in the world. What TV Heroes decoder could a kid buy for a quarter in 1955? It's going to put you out of misery there. That, of course, is Captain Midnight's.
Oh, sure.
Jesus.
How many couples frolic on the Newlywed Game?
Three.
Four.
What?
Which of the Jetsons attend Little Dipper School?
Can you repeat the question?
Which of the Jetsons attends Little Dipper School?
Elroy?
Yes.
Yay!
Yay!
Who takes delight in showing pictures of 100-year-old people on the Today Show?
Oh my God, I have no idea.
Willard Scott.
Thank goodness, it's been a while since we had a question. Who moved into the art studio on Blake Carrington's estate in 1981?
Dallas?
Benson?
Alexis Carrington. Oh, what's the nickname of Kizzy's son on Roots?
Oh, my goodness, I have no idea.
Chicken George.
Oh, dear.
My goodness.
All right, back to the game. We're in our last chunk.
Yep.
Oh, there's a lot of questions still. We're not really
much. Okay.
Newhart. Bob Newhart show.
Newhart.
Correct. MASH versus Cheers.
Cheers.
Yes, by about 20. ER versus CSI, Original Rays.
ER.
CSI.
Wow.
337 to 331. Squeaking it out.
Oh, my God.
Doogie Howser, MD. Marcus Welby, MD.
Marcus Welby.
Yes, by like a bunch.
Yeah.
Mr. Ed versus Ed.
Oh, God. Mr. Ed.
Yeah. By like 60. Mr. Belvedere versus Benson.
Only one could sit on his balls. I am guessing Benson.
You're supposed to say, is it Benson?
Is it Benson?
It is Benson. Hope and Faith versus Eight Simple Rules.
Eight Simple Rules.
Correct. By 376. The Rockford Files versus Ironside. And the Ironside would be the original, I suppose, not the one with the
Blair Underwood.
Yeah.
All right. Rockford.
That'd make it too easy.
199 for Ironside. It was on for a while versus 122. Matlock versus the Andy Griffith Show.
Andy Griffith.
249 versus 195. One Tree Hill versus Seventh Heaven.
Oh, man. One Tree Hill.
No, Seventh Heaven.
Really?
243 Ooh. Versus 187.
Oh, my God.
Grimm versus Angel.
Angel.
No, Grimm.
What?
Yeah, 123 versus 110. According to the Jim versus George Lopez, the show.
Really?
Because it was
God
just,
damn it.
If it was George Lopez, the answer would be one. Because this is one.
According to Jim.
182 to 120. Early Edition versus Parenthood, 2010.
Early Edition.
Oh. Parenthood 2010, 103 to Early Edition 90.
103? Jesus
Gilmore
Christ.
Gilmore Girls versus 6 Feet Under.
Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. 153-63. Ugly Betty, Joan of Arcadia.
Ugly Betty.
Yeah, 85-45. Miami Vice, Magnum P.I.
Ooh.
Oh, Miami Vice.
Shit. Magnum P.I., 163. Miami Vice, only 112. Party of Five, The Ghost Whisperer.
I cannot stand Jennifer Love Hewitt. Ghost Whisperer, because I think that was really bad. It feels like it would stay longer. No!
Party of Five, 142. Ghost Whisperer, only 107. Medium versus Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel.
By a lot.
Nice.
212 to 130. Married with Children, That 70s Show.
Oh, God.
Gross.
Married with Children.
Yeah, Married with Children. 262 to 200.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Almost Human.
Heard of it.
Versus the 2011's Charlie's Angels. That was a thing?
Yeah.
Huh.
What was the first show again, sorry?
Almost Human. What do you mean, what was the first show?
Favorite show.
Almost Human.
Let's go Almost Human.
Yes. Yep. 13, just 13 episodes, guys. You should do a podcast about Almost Human. Versus,
should you?
Yes. Okay. Versus 8 for Charlie's Angels. All right. Alias versus Alias Smith and Jones.
Yeah. Alias.
Yes, 105 to 50. All right. Let's do a score break.
Okay. I have 20, Sarah has 18, Alex has 15.
Okay. Which of the Ingalls went blind? Which of the Ingalls went blind?
Laura?
Mary.
That is an Ingall, right?
What bigots neighbors have included Frank and Irene Lorenzo?
Which bigot?
Oh my God.
What bigot's neighbors have included Frank and
Archie Bunker?
I heard what beagle. I was like, what the fuck?
Beagle?
Yeah. Snoopy is neighbors now? I don't.
That's Archie Barker. Yeah! What Dickens novel was adapted for the Alcoa Hours, the Stingiest Man in Town? What Dickens novel is adapted for the Alcoa Hours, The Stingiest Man in Town?
I have no idea.
Oh, come on. Think about it.
Okay, repeat the question for me one more time.
What Dickens novel was adapted for the Alcoa Hours, The Stingiest Man in Town? Dickens, Cheap Bastard.
Scrooge, Christmas Carol.
What Dynasty star portrayed a spy in the miniseries Monte Carlo?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Dallas? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
No idea? Don't know any. Did you say a Dynasty star?
I don't.
You don't know anybody who starred in Dynasty?
I don't.
Not even Very one. I'm just trying to push it.
Patrick Dawn, Dave. Was he in that?
Joan Collins.
Joan Collins. I thought about that, but then I thought if I said it and it was wrong, I'd be really embarrassed.
Well, now you're double embarrassed.
I know, I really am.
Keep going.
I'm right over here.
How many seconds did you have to answer the $16,000 question on... How many seconds do you have to answer the $16,000 question on the $64,000 question?
16.
You'd think. 30. What Dallas character, and the answer is not Dynasty, tried to drown his 1983 marital problems in bourbon and branch? Bourbon and branch?
Carrington.
Bobby Carrington. Ewing.
Bobby Ewing. Oh, see? Bobby I should have caught up on Dallas and Dynasty.
Whitney versus Franklin and Bash.
Franklin and Bash.
By two episodes. 38 to 40.
Wow.
Are You There, Chelsea? Versus I Hate My Teenage Daughter.
Oh my God. Are You There, Chelsea?
12 to 13. Mm. Clueless versus 10 Things I Hate About You.
Clueless.
62-20. Hell on Wheels versus The Killing.
Oh my God. Hell on Wheels.
Yeah, 57-44. Deadwood versus Torchwood.
Deadwood.
Deadwood 36, Torchwood 41. Rules of Engagement versus Till Death.
Rules of Engagement.
100 versus 81. Breaking in. Uh-huh. That is with a G.
Yep.
Up All Night. Oh, God. Remember Up All Night?
Yeah. Up All Night.
35 to Breaking In's 20. The Closer, Saving Grace.
The Closer.
Yeah. 109-46. Samantha Who versus Jesse.
Oh, Jesse.
42-35. Nice. Yes, Dear versus My Name is Earl.
Yes, Dear?
122-96. Mad About You.
Shit was on forever.
Yeah.
Versus Spin City.
Mad About You.
Yes, by 20. Bunheads versus Off the Map.
Oh, Bunheads.
18-13. Simon and Simon versus Heart to Heart.
Heart to Heart.
Simon and Simon, 156 to Heart to Heart's 110. Harry's Law versus Body of Proof.
Body of Proof.
42-34. Chuck versus Dexter.
Oh, shit. Chuck.
Dexter, really? 96 to Chuck's 91.
Wow.
Yeah, but Dexter had many seasons versus Chuck's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but shorter.
Per season.
Right, yeah.
Mission Impossible versus Get Smart.
Mission Impossible.
Set 171 versus 138. That was your last question, Tara.
Okay.
Here's your last question, Alex. The Mysteries of Laura versus Smash.
Oh, God. Smash.
Mysteries of Laura 38, really? Smash 32. And the last question of the game for Sarah, Muppets Tonight versus The Muppets. Two short-lived attempted Muppet revivals.
The Muppets.
Muppets Tonight,
wow,
22 episodes to The Muppets 19.
Felt.
Scores, please, Tara.
All right, Alex had 18, Sarah has 22, I have 25.
All right, Chasing Eagles question.
Good job, Tara.
Congratulations. Yay.
Yeah, let's shit and giggle.
Okay. Bonanza versus, and everybody's going to bet on the spread with a number, okay?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Bonanza versus Law and Order.
Oh, man. Bonanza plus 30.
Law and Order plus 10.
Bonanza plus 22.
Now you guess, get 25 day points. It was a 25 spread in favor of Law and Order.
Well done, value guess.
Oh, yes, nice.
Very well done. So Tara, congratulations. You win.
Tara,
your season theme winning music is MIA. So do you want me to sing it to you?
No, we can just wrap it up.
Okay. In that case.
It's the thought that counts.
Nope. Oh, God, guys. I'm just surprised we're here. Well, it's Bud the Spud from the Bright Red Mud, rolling down the highway smiling. The Spuds are big on the back of Bud's rig. They're from Prince Edward Island, just like N with an E, which we talked about. We also went around the dial with stops at Downward Dog, The Mick, It's Just Anxiety, Judge Hatchet, and nothing else that you know of. It wasn't cut from the show, if that's what you're thinking. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was a winner of this week's Game Time and the season. Congratulations, woo! Tara.
Tara, yay. Tara.
You're the best around. Nobody's ever going to keep you down. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Is this some kind of Quaker thing?
Sarah D. Bunting. And Alex Collins.
You're all my kindred spirits.
Thanks for listening, everybody. and we'll see you next time. Right here. Oh no, somebody's yawning. Right here on Extra Hot Grip.
As God is my witness, I will do everything in my earthly power to make you want to keep me.
Good night.
God, give me strength to succeed in my quest.
That will do.
Sorry. Quite like praying.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.